Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Lindsay Whistle Fenton. After losing her sister to suicide in 2011, Marissa Vasseri founded the Jana Marie Foundation in her sister's honor. The state college-based nonprofit aims to educate and empower young people in the Center County region and to build awareness around mental well-being and suicide prevention. We've invited her to talk with us during National Suicide Prevention Month about the foundation and her sister. Marissa Vasseri, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about Jana. What was she like?
Yeah, so Jana, you know, I still have the memories of her long brown hair kind of flowing way behind her and just the smile that would light up the room whenever she walked in. She had a huge personality and was a lot of fun to be around. Really smart, really creative, and just, you know, everybody just wanted to kind of be around her. She had that quality about her. But there was several sides to Jana, as there are with any of us. And one of those was this darkness that kind of loomed within her. And she started, you know, showing signs of struggling at a young age with depression and a defiance disorder. And so all the way through, although she had this light about her, she would at times kind of push away from the people that mattered most to her and struggled from time to time. But whenever she was supported, whenever she was able to strip away those masks that we often wear when we're in situations that we might not be most comfortable about, she was unstoppable. She was just a lot of fun.
So you mentioned that Jana had been struggling. When did you, as her sister, become aware that she was kind of dealing with some things?
Yeah, so I think I recognized at a fairly young age that she was going through some difficulties. My parents were great at recognizing that the different kinds of signs that there were. She had stopped sleeping through the night, had trouble focusing in school and completing tasks around the house, and they were able to recognize that and seek treatment through primary care physicians and local psychologists. And so I think I recognized at a young age that there was something going on. Growing up, though, I'm not sure we ever really had the conversation about mental illness or about mental wellness even, just because it wasn't really talked about back then. I would say that the first time that as a family we really sat down and had that conversation was probably when I was about 10 years old. It was right after I had walked in on my sister attempting to take her life. And we, you know, were able to get her that appropriate professional help to save her life. But at the same time, we need to have that conversation of what is going on and what are the best ways that we can support her through this time and really have that family support around her.
So she was able to get some treatment, because I know that can be a real challenge for people, is getting appropriate mental health treatment when they realize that they might need it.
Yeah, I think you know, there's a shortage of psychologists and psychiatrists nationwide, but there's a lot of people out there who are trained to be able to help. And I think also the supports that are around us every day are really important when it comes to treatment. And so while we're waiting for professional help, because sometimes there is that waiting period, like you mentioned, having people that we know that we can trust, that we can open up to, and finding ways to help us feel better is really important, just like we do when we have a cold or a cough or something physically going on. We find ways to kind of make ourselves feel better until the treatment starts to work or until we can get ourselves to the doctor or wherever we might need to be. We need to be doing that same with our mental health.
You said the first attempt that you walked in on Jana was 12?
Mm-hmm.
And how old was she when she completed suicide?
She was 30 when she died by suicide. And so in between, it was kind of a long and windy journey, as any kind of recovery is. So there were times where she did really well, and then times where it was a little bit more difficult again. The one thing that remained consistent throughout, though, is when she was surrounded by adults and people that appreciated her for who she was and accepted her for who she was, she really excelled. I know when she came back to Penn State area and decided to go to college and graduate, she graduated with honors, and she was able to get a degree in HDFS, and that was really because of her advisor, who allowed her just to be who she was, strip away all the masks that she wore, and just really worked with her and helped identify what her strengths were and really supported the person that she was.
How did you learn that Jana had died?
I was down in Philadelphia at the time, and my dad had called me, and I will always remember that day. I think anytime there's any kind of trauma, it just becomes ingrained in your mind forever. I was actually celebrating my 1 year wedding anniversary. I'm now divorced, but we were in our new house that we had just purchased, and my dad had called and said, you need to sit down. I was like, I'm okay. And he said, we lost your sister. And I remember my first reaction being like, well, she's run away before, so we'll find her. We can make calls and we'll figure out, you know, where she is. And he said, no, you don't understand. You know, she passed away. And so that's how I found out. And it was, you know, very shocking. It's a grief that I feel like is unlike a lot of other ones. I've had a lot of people in my life who've passed away. But when it comes to suicide, it's a lot of what-if questions, a lot of wondering, you know, what could I have done differently? How else could I have shown that they were loved and that they were cared about? And there's just a lot more kind of questions like
you,
that.
You take it on yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
And grief does look very different for everyone. It's a very individual thing. What did your grief for Jana and for Jana under the circumstances that she died look like?
So it was difficult. But I really transferred my energy into remembering the person that she was and all the good that she did. I mean, she had the most caring heart out of anyone I've ever known. She would give her shirt off the back if somebody needed it, and just was an incredible person. And so I really wanted that to be the memory that we had of Jana, because there was a lot of chaos near the end of her life with drug addiction and everything like that. So I really wanted to bring back the person that she was. And so my grief was really channeled into starting the foundation, the Jana Marie Foundation, and helping to just educate anyone I could about suicide prevention and helping hopefully people know that they're not alone and that the thoughts of death or dying can be common, but they never have to be acted on, and that we can all provide hope and light in other people's lives, just like Jana did for so many.
How did the stigma surrounding suicide affect the grieving process for your family? How did people act around you or respond to those circumstances?
Yeah, I think a lot of people didn't know what to say. You know, we don't talk about suicide, and we don't ask a lot of questions when somebody is struggling with a mental illness. And so there were some individuals that didn't know what to say, and so they didn't really say anything at all. And there were other people who had learned about what had happened and who weren't real close to our family, but all of a sudden reached out. And once we started sharing our story, it's been an incredible journey because we've learned so many other stories. And you really learn that suicide touches so many lives. And it is something that should be talked about because it is one of the most preventable forms of death. And a lot of that comes from removing that stigma or that shame that surrounds it and making it more acceptable to talk about.
And I think with any kind of death or grief, people are well-intentioned and often want to be supportive, but they don't know how because we don't talk about it and people just simply lack the tools or the language. So what advice would you give to someone who is trying to offer support to someone they know who's grieving?
I think anytime we reach out to someone, that when we're well-intentioned about it, it means so much to the person on the receiving end. So I wouldn't worry so much about what to say or how to say it, but just letting the person know that you're there for them, that you care about them, and that you're there to walk beside them on the grief journey. And like you said, everybody grieves differently. So it's really important, I think, to ask, you know, what do you need at this time, rather than just making assumptions of what the person may need.
What did grief look like for your parents and for the rest of your family? Did people find their own ways through the pain?
Yeah, so I think all of us grieved a lot differently. So I kind of put my energy into starting the Jana Marie Foundation. My parents, especially my mom, just found different ways to stay busy. I don't know if our house had ever been so clean. So she was really, you know, just trying to find ways just to keep busy and keep her mind from going down that what-if kind of rabbit hole that can take over sometimes. And my dad put a lot of work into his business, his work as well. But we also found ways as a family to come together and to remember Jana. So as an amazing person as she was full of chaos always. She would always come late to meals and have some kind of elaborate drink or dessert or something going on. So we found little ways to add that back into our lives. And we still, when there's a day where everything's just kind of going wrong, we're like, oh, Jana's with us, joking around. But it's just, you find those memories and small things and you connect over them and find ways to just hold on to some of those good memories.
How did it change your family dynamic and your role within your family to lose your sister? And I believe she's your only sister.
Yeah, so it was a big adjustment after. So Jana was always kind of in the spotlight and I was more on the backseat, just kind of coasting along throughout life. And so all of a sudden, now the focus was on me and a whole lot of questions of, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? And so it was relearning what is my role, and my parents relearning too of remaining connected but not so over the top connected. And and that takes time. It takes time to relearn roles and to figure out, I think for a little while there, I was trying to also be the parent to my parents of wanting to make sure that they were okay and taken care of. But we found our spot, I think, again. And it, you just go through it together, and it's important just to stay open and honest with each other of what's working and what we, might need changed or might need to look at a little bit further.
How has the grief changed over time? I think there's an idea that there's like a timetable associated with grief. What's your experience been like?
Yeah, I don't know if there's a time period. I mean, I think you're right. They have that saying out there that time heals all wounds. And I would say that is probably not the case. I think over time you learn new ways to cope with what has happened in your past. But there are still moments where that grief comes back. There was a story that had circulated before about the ocean. Like, grief is kind of like an ocean where at times there'll be these real strong waves and at times it'll slow down a little bit. And I think that's a better description of it, where at times we just float along and we remember and then other times the song will come on or you'll see a type of flower or something that reminds us of her and it hits you hard and you work through it and you just count on the supports that you have in your life to help you during those times.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Lindsay Whistle Fenton, and our guest is Marissa Vasseri, president and founder of the Jana Marie Foundation, a nonprofit based in State College that aims to educate and empower young people. The foundation is named after Vasseri's sister, who died by suicide in 2011. You talked about how you sort of channeled your grief into starting the Jana Marie Foundation. How did you come up with the idea to create this foundation in honor of your sister's memory?
I grew up in the State College area, and I think when I was going through the grieving process, there was a part of me that wished there could have been some kind of organization or group that could have talked about, what is mental health? What does mental wellness even look like? How do we become resilient? And so I just wanted to channel that. Jana also really liked the arts and was very creative. And so I just wanted to kind of bring the two together because I know art and music and poetry, all of that can be so healing. And I just really wanted to make sure that I was able to bring something back to my hometown that allowed people to become empowered through self-expression and really focus on what is mental wellness and how can we build resiliency.
And I think it's interesting you use the term mental wellness and well-being, because I think often we don't really think about mental health until we think about somebody in mental distress or suffering from a mental illness, and we don't maybe treat it the same way we treat just like our physical well-being, where we're regularly paying attention to, are we getting enough exercise or are we eating well?
Yeah, and like you said, it's just like physical wellness. So we're all on a sliding scale for our physical health, where we can go from well to unwell at any moment. And we do things that are preventative care so that we can make sure that we're taking the best care of ourselves that we can. And then we know when we're starting to slide on that scale and becoming unwell, that there are people we can reach out to and people that can help us through it. And we want that same thing to be for mental health as well. We're all on that same spectrum, and we can have days that are really great, and then there are times where we slide a little bit on that scale. And so although there's preventative things that we can be doing for our mental health too, we need to make sure that those resources are available and are really being promoted out there so that everyone knows that there are safe people that we can talk to and places to go for if we ever do need to reach out for help.
And you talked about art and creativity and the role that that plays with the work Jana Marie Foundation does. I know when I walk through the YMCA in Bellefonte, or when I walk different places in town, I get to see these beautiful, bright, vibrant sculptures. What is the Stompers Project?
Yeah, so the Stompers Project was created. It's an art project that really stomps out the stigma that surrounds mental and emotional health and really breaks down those barriers to help people know that it's okay to reach out for help or reach out to help someone. So they are deconstructed sneakers. So we get sneakers donated to us, and then we wash them really well and then deconstruct them all. And we'll go into different groups and organizations and educate about a topic that has to do with mental wellness. And at the end of the program, all the participants will get to decorate a piece of the sneaker to share a little bit of their story. And then it gets built up into a statue of a person that's 6'4", or at the YMCA, they're kid size versions. And it tells that collective story from that group or that organization. So we have 17 of them made to date. We just unveiled our most recent one, which was for veterans mental health, and talking about the resources that are available for active military as well as our veterans.
And that's just one of the many types of projects and initiatives you do at Jana Marie Foundation. One of your focuses is to work with young people and empowering them, specifically young women. Why young women or girls?
So we started in memory of Jana, and one of the things that she did was counsel at-risk youth girls specifically. And so that's really why we started with that focus. And the middle school and high school years are really difficult. It's a tough transitional
time. We've talked about it. It's brutal.
Yeah. You know, I certainly never want to go back to that time. And I think for girls, there's a lot of different pressures that are added to us. And so we really wanted to provide those resources and empower young women to know that they have a voice, that they can use self-expression to get out those emotions or those feelings and just know that they're cared about. However, we have started opening up our programs a lot to young men as well. And we started a program specifically for young men last year called Ignite, because we also recognize that there's a lot of stigma around men and boys talking about mental health. You know, it's something that, you know, men just don't talk about it. Men don't cry is kind of that idea that's out there. And that's certainly not the case. Their mental health is just as important as anybody else's. And so we need to make sure that everybody is comfortable talking about mental wellness and knowing what the resources are and knowing that it's okay to be vulnerable, that, you know, there's great strength in vulnerability and it can help us in a lot of different ways. But we need to know that there's also help out there should it ever become too much.
What kinds of differences do you see in the programs for young men versus young women? Are there differences in the types of support that they need?
Yeah, I think there's differences in the way that in the comfort level in talking about the different topics. So we definitely want to make sure that everybody is comfortable in getting something out of the program. So with our young women, you know, we use art and we use music, we use movement, sometimes dance and things like that, different forms of really that expression. And the speakers really talk to what it's like to be a young woman that's growing up in today's society and what we can do to support one another and build each other up instead of kind of tearing each other down. I know sometimes it's hard, especially in those middle school, high school years with even girls, you know, interacting with other girls and what that looks like. And so we really want to talk a lot about the connections and how important it is to have those strong connections with ourselves and with the other young women in the room. For our boys' programs, really similar, but we keep it a little bit more active. So we still do art and we still do music and movement type activities, but we keep moving a little bit more. We really want male role models who are open and talking. So the last one we did, Adam Schwartz came in, who's a puppeteer, and talked about, you know, cartooning and making puppets and what that looks like. We also had a speaker who was from California who talked about vulnerability and what it was like to work in animation and, you know, the first time that he had to show his work to someone and get it critiqued and how that made him feel and how he overcame a lot of that and talking about the resiliency side of it.
You also work to facilitate conversations between parents and kids. Why is that important?
So our families are our natural support system. So I think having strong relationships with parents is really important. It tends to be the first place that kids go for information. So we need to just help strengthen those bonds, and not always just in the way of encouraging those courageous conversations, but also encouraging ways that we can just have fun with one another, that we can let our hair down and just play and just strengthen the relationships that way as well. There's a saying out there that every child is one adult away from being a success story. And I think that's really important to keep in mind, that each one of us can play a role in the lives of the children that we see every day, whether we're a parent or a teacher. And a lot of that comes to just having a relationship with the youth that are around us.
What are some of the topics that you found are most difficult for parents and kids to talk about?
I think there's a lot of different topics that are difficult. You know, of course, sex, drugs, suicide, mental health, all of those can be a little bit harder to talk about. I think what's really important for parents to keep in mind is that the younger we start these kind of conversations, the easier it is, and the easier it is for our youth to come to us later in life. And so obviously the way we talk to a 3-year-old or 4-year-old is going to look a lot different than the way we talk to a teenager. But if we just start having daily conversations, whether it be in the car or over dinner or while they're doing an art project, it's just going to make it easier when we do need to have some more of those courageous conversations.
There is a fear of bringing up certain topics like suicide, that if you mention it, you're going to plant this idea in their head that somehow wasn't there before.
Yeah, so that's one of the biggest myths that are out there. Certainly that is not the case. If somebody is thinking about suicide, they're thinking about it. So by talking about it, by asking about it, are you thinking about killing yourself? It's going to actually help them feel a little bit more at ease. They're going to feel like there are people out there who can be connected to them, that they can trust, that you'll know what to do with that information, and just they'll feel a little bit better about being open with what's going on and what their feelings are.
We talked a little bit earlier about some of the warning signs that you saw specifically with Jana. What are some of the just kind of general signs that people might want to keep an eye out for if they are concerned that someone they know might be thinking about suicide?
Yeah, so it's any marked change in behavior. So sleeping more, sleeping less, eating more, eating less. If they're giving away prized possessions, if they're withdrawing from their friends or family, all of those might be warning signs that something's going on. Or even if they're, you know, somebody who's normally, you know, kind of has the more sad demeanor around them and all of a sudden are really happy and joyous, that also might be cause for concern. So anytime we see any kind of change in behavior or activities, we want to ask questions to see what's going on. And if we have that kind of spidey sense or that sixth sense going off in us, we want to ask, you know, and let them know, I'm concerned about you. Are you thinking about killing yourself? You know, or I've noticed these changes are going on. Is there anything I can help you with, or can I support you in some sort of way?
Just simply asking that question and kind of showing up.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there are, like, as we talked about before, similarly to with grief, I think when it comes to offering support to someone who might be in mental distress, again, people want to be there and want to offer support, but just don't quite feel like they know how. And I know I've seen people criticize just the sharing of hotline numbers on social media, as, you know, that doesn't go far enough. So I think it is helpful to give people tangible things they can do.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that we can keep in mind when it comes to suicide prevention is that anyone can help save lives with it. It's really about offering hope to people. So, you know, those small acts make a huge difference. Even if a smile at a stranger, or holding the door open for someone, or letting somebody know that they matter, or thanking someone for the courage that they said that something was going on, all of those can make a really big difference in someone's life. And the most important thing we can do is really just let somebody know that we're there for them and that we're going to be beside them and help them get the resources that they need.
much of your work through Jana Marie Foundation is aimed at addressing the stigma and making it more comfortable to talk about suicide and mental health in general. What are some of the biggest misconceptions out there that you'd like to see just generally about mental health that you'd like to change?
Yeah, I think it just needs to become more of an everyday kind of conversation, just like our physical health is. I think that's one of the biggest things that we can do, and also remind people that it's a diagnosable illness, just as, you know, cancer, diabetes, anything like that is. It is a disease of the brain. And so it's really important to just support people and help connect them into those resources. And it's also important to keep in mind that you're not weak if you're getting a resource. It's not a character flaw. It's that there's, you know, we just all need a little bit of support from time to time.
And it's clear you're very passionate about the work that you're doing, but I can imagine it takes an emotional toll. How do you self-care? How do you take care of yourself?
Yeah, so I have amazing friends and family that support, which is amazing. And then also I love getting out in the woods and just taking those moments anytime I can for myself as well. And I think that's important too, is recognizing what are our self-care? Is it running? Is it reading? Is it going for walks in the wood? And then making sure that we take time to do those things, especially since we live in such a fast-paced world.
What other activities or projects do you have in the works at Jana Marie Foundation right now?
So we've been going under some rebranding, which is really exciting. So we're going to have a new website coming out soon and new promotional materials. We also are doing more with our parent-child programming, so our parent and teenage programming. We have our wellness forum coming up on October 20th. So all different things that are happening, all really exciting. So definitely check us out on the website to see all of those upcoming events.
Where would you like to see the foundation go in the future as it continues to grow?
I would love to see us still really making sure that all the fidelity of our programs are being upheld. So continuing to expand, continuing to reach new young people and parents and adults in general in the community, but doing so in a way that really makes sure that the fidelity of our program is being upheld and that we're getting out the word about the resources that are around us.
Marissa Viseri, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Marissa Viseri is the founder and president of the Jana Marie Foundation, a nonprofit based in State College that aims to educate and empower young people and raise awareness around mental health and suicide prevention. If you or someone you know is in crisis, you can reach the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. Hear more Take Note interviews on our website at wpsu.org/take note. I'm Lindsay Whistle Fenton, WPSU.